future.
There are no people.
There are no people in the future.
No people at all.
There are no people in the future.
Where did all my people go?
There are no people in the future.
Let me try my people call.
Yes, everybody. It is Monday, January 25th, 2021. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. Or wait, or is it Out the Coop Live? Or is it Out the Coop podcast? It's a total mix-up, everybody! No, welcome, welcome. This is Ken Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. And, you know, each week on our flagship podcast on Fridays, I talk to our unemployed Trump staffer, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. And on Monday nights, right now, where it is, usually what we're doing is we're doing our live show on the Podbean app where we take call-in and that kind of stuff. But a few things happened this past week. Sean wasn't at his computer, number one. But even if he was, I had a kind of freezer blow up in my house. Not blow up, but start leaking all over the place. And I had to have a guy in to kind of do some work. So we figured between those two things, we're just going to kind of just scrap the Friday show this week. Do our show tonight. I had hoped that we were going to be able to do a dual broadcast, both from on the Podbean app and on our YouTube page. But alas, it didn't work. I actually thought it was a long shot. And I, you know, if we want to get in all the technical stuff, maybe we can do that later on, but not right now. But anyways, that's why you got the Out the Coop Live music intro. Yet here we've got Out the Coop Live with Sean Kitchen. Sean, how you doing, man?
Pretty good. How are you?
Pretty good. Well, so on tonight's show, we've got a bunch of stuff. It's thank God we're all back to normal. And I hope you guys are all kind of like, you know, enjoying the new day that is here. If you do not hear the dripping sarcasm in my voice, I apologize greatly for that. So anyways, it was a big week, though, you got to say, right? Biden is president. Right. That's a big deal. That's something that happens since we were on the show last. Kamala Harris makes history as the first woman, first South Asian, first African-American vice president. Now, Republicans are wasting no time showing their true colors. McConnell pulls an all day stunt or a stunt on day one, I should say, to block Democrats from taking over the majority of the committees. That's been a little bit of a shit show, which but, you know, I hope that's going to serve to wake everybody up. And yes, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris were sworn in as president and vice president this past week, but Chairman Sanders stole the inauguration. It became an instant internet meme with his winter coat and mittens. If you haven't been following me on Instagram, the RC Press on Instagram, then you've missed all the songs that I've been posting about that. And yes, the memes have been glorious. Speaking of Chairman Sanders, he started Biden's presidency by waving two big middle fingers to everyone's unity talk. Senator Sanders wasted no time and threatened Republicans with reconciliation or reconciliation, as he puts it, if they do not agree with COVID relief. Sanders stated that Republicans use budget reconciliation to push tax cuts through the rich or for the rich, and that Democrats will use the process to help working families. Only fair to fair, you wash one's back, the other wash the other, kind of goes like that. Earlier today, Biden lifted the Trump ban on transgender individuals serving openly in the military. We're going to talk a little about some of these executive actions today, too, as well. That was a big one. That was one that was instituted by Trump, which was Biden promised to repeal and delivered. As we go live tonight, just a short time ago, the House has delivered the article of impeachment, the single article of impeachment about, like, you know, basically insurrection or kind of like, what's the word they use? Encouraging. It's not the right word, but I can't wait. Encouraging insurrection. That's not the word. I'll get to it in a minute. Against, you know, former President Donald Trump, Now, apparently, Chief Justice Roberts is unwilling or uninterested in presiding over the second trial. The Constitution says that Chief Justice has to preside over the trial, impeachment trial over a sitting president, but doesn't really spell out what happens if it's against a president who has left office. So we'll see. But the plan is for Senator Leahy to go ahead and be the presiding officer. I'm sure that we're going to see that causing its own little kind of kerfuffle in Washington, D.C., but that'll play itself out. Joe Biden is making inroads with labor in ways that previous administrations have not. On his first day in office, Biden fired Peter Robb, boom, the former head of the National Labor Relations Board. Robb was a corporate lawyer who helped Ronald Reagan fire thousands of air traffic controllers in the 1980s. Robb was just replaced with Peter Orr as interim head of the NLRB. Orr made waves in a ruling that allowed Northwestern University football players to unionize. Hey, college athletes, now's your time. That's all I got to say. Big Twitterverse controversy over hashtag forced to vote leads to a frustrating debate between Sam Cedar of the Majority Report and Breonna Joy Gray. You know, she was the former national press secretary for the Bernie Sanders campaign. But the debate took place on Bad Faith Podcast, in which Breonna Joy Gray's co-hosts that with Virgil Texas from Trap House. And it was, well, we'll have some stuff to say about it. I mean, it was so problematic in so many different ways. Yeah, I'll get to it then. Today, a little bit closer to home. Yes, documents obtained by Pennsylvania Spotlight. Watch these folks, everybody. Watch these folks in the coming days, weeks, years. Anyways, the documents show that Pennsylvania Senate Republicans spent over $1 million in legal fees. What do they do that with that? You know, to disenfranchise Pennsylvania voters. That's right. Taxpayer money to disenfranchise Pennsylvania voters, right? They spent your tax dollars to stop you from voting last year. That's your Pennsylvania GOP working for you. On Friday night, it was reported that in the New York Times that an unnamed Pennsylvania politician, nobody knew who he was, played a key role in trying to stage a coup within the Department of Justice in order to force Georgia to overturn their election results. Have you waited long enough? Have you not been paying attention? Yes. In follow-up reporting, it was found that it was none other than Scott Perry. That's right. Good old Scott Perry, who aided Trump in trying to fire the senior staff at the Department of Justice in some kind of like Nixon era, like Saturday Night Massacre kind of thing. But, you know, and to install a Trump loyalist who was willing to overturn the Georgia election results. It's a really fascinating story, I have to say, about, you know, like, you know, how Perry like personally took it upon himself to go push this dude to Trump. And then Trump basically taking the bait. And the plot thickens against Riley Williams. You remember her. She is that 22-year-old Harrisburg area woman who took part in a Capitol insurrection. Then she allegedly stole Nancy Pelosi's laptop and then tried to sell it to Russia. That's according to reporting. Now, according to the D.C.-based NBC investigative reporter Scott McFarlane, I should say, everybody, I was looking for any articles posted on this and asked him to kind of like, you know, point to his links and sources. He's an investigative reporter for NBC in D.C. He put this up on his Twitter. So this is according to him. I have not been able to follow that up since that. And that was about an hour ago. So according to the D.C.-based NBC investigative reporter Scott McFarlane, Williams, who was released on bail under the supervision of her mother, hopped on the Internet and encouraged people involved in the insurrection to destroy all the evidence. McFarlane reported on Twitter that the U.S. Justice Department told the judge in the case just that, as they were trying to make the case that all Internet access should be prohibited for Williams. So a lot of people have been posting online, been like, why was she allowed out of bail on bail to begin with? There's just a story to that. But here you go. If you think that, you know, okay, people are going to learn their lessons, maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe the Q brain is too deep. But we're not out of the woods, but PA this past week did see the lowest numbers of new cases of COVID-19 and the lowest numbers of deaths in weeks. That is really encouraging encouraging numbers on the part of, the PA public health staff. I mean, and people really kind of pulling together in this state, despite all the freaking crazy anti-maskers, we've been able to kind of do that. So hats off to everyone who's working for the Pennsylvania Department of Health and all the folks on the ground who've been making all that happen. At today's last call, give a little kind of Free Will Brewing recommendations. There's some great stuff out. I'll have to admit, I have not had a whole lot of Free Will Brewing of late. I have been really cutting back because of the beginning of the semester, all this. But I happened to get a little shipment of some little tasties from Levante Brewing last week. I was in a stout mood and they had it, so I'll tell you a little bit about what I got there. Want to remind everybody to tune in to the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org, or you can tune in to the Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. And make sure to subscribe to Rick's daily podcast on iTunes, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast. And big, huge shout out to our latest, our new member. Thank you, Ben. Ben coming in at the $25 a month level. That's $25 a month. That is the class warrior level. Ben, thank you so much for supporting Raging Chicken. And thanks to all our patrons who've hopped on patreon.com/rcpress and become a patron in the new year or in the old year. And special thanks to those folks who have been with us right from the beginning, before we even thought about having a podcast, back when we were just first launching our first webpage, our first progressive media site, way back in 2011, if you can believe it was that long ago. Well, if you want a progressive future, we need progressive media, everybody. You can help support Pull No Punches homegrown progressive media today. Become a patron of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your level of support. In times like these, we need to invest in our progressive media infrastructure to keep the media in the movement, and the movement in the media. We're in for a fight for our future, that's for sure, and we're all in for the fight. Now we need you. Become a patron for as little as $5 a month by going to patreon.com/rcpress. And if you're still on the fence, you can always drop a few bucks in our tip jar at any amount. Just go to paypal.me/rcpress. That's paypal.me/rcpress. And remind everybody, if you're checking this out on YouTube, make sure that you subscribe to our YouTube page. Subscribe and hit that little bell so every time we go live, you know right away. You can hop on and kind of contribute to the conversation. You can check us out. You can kind of leave comments. You can join, ask questions. We're always monitoring the comments during our shows. That is both during our flagship show and in our live show. And on Monday nights, normally you could join us on the Podbean app for Out to Coop Live. That show you can actually call in on too as well. Some things for the new year we're looking on is to try to get this all kind of brought together so we can both broadcast live on Podbean and we could actually keep the Zoom video kind of look too as well. But we shall see. So, Sean, yeah, there's a big, long thing. And, you know, it's always a little weird, like, not having music in the background as I'm saying all that stuff. I just feel like I'm talking to the void. So, how you doing?
Pretty good. Welcome to, like, normalcy.
Yeah, I feel
mean,
better.
Like, I mean, we're back at, like, New York Times running stories about Joe Biden riding a Peloton and having a Rolex. You know, we're back to normal. Pretty soon, Fox News is going to be impeaching him over the wrong flavored ice cream. You know, I'm glad we're back to the mid-2000s. It feels great.
Yeah, it's great, right? And I love that, you know, Dana Bash on CNN has Bernie Sanders on and say, well, you complained when the Republicans used reconciliation, and now you're going to use reconciliation. Aren't you a hypocrite? Right? I mean, there you go. Back to normal.
Yes, we're back to normal. You know, the calls for unity. I guess, like, putting all the jokes aside, it feels great that we're actually here at this point.
I agree.
I mean, like, the last, like, few months have been some of the most nerve-wracking fucking months of my life. Even, like, up and through the election, it felt great once the election was called. But, like, actually seeing this through to the end, you know, yep, with the big lies about the election campaign being fraudulent, you know, an attempted coup, multiple attempted coups. You know, it's good that, like, we're fucking at this point. Like,
yeah, I have to agree. I'm glad we're past that. And I don't know if you have the same feeling or not, but not having the kind of barrage of coverage about Trump's tweets and all that kind of nonsense. Right?
I mean, we didn't even talk about this on our podcast last week about the fucking Nazi purge that happened on, like, Twitter and the reckoning that happened with, yeah, like, Nazi Twitter.
Yeah.
No, I mean, like, the website's, like, fucking normal again. Like, it's actually nice to be on Twitter without, like, what the fuck is he tweeting now? And, you know, like, one of the things I think the media is going to have to get over is stop covering Trump. Who gives a fuck what Trump thinks at this point? He's out of office.
Yep.
He's not the president anymore. And, like, writing stories about, like, Trump getting pissed off at Fauci,
whatever,
just only serves Trump's ego. Like, you know what I mean?
I don't even know why he's a story anymore. Other than, you know, he could be a, yeah, story once again once he takes the stand for his impeachment. But guess what?
To get arrested afterwards.
Right. There you go. You cover that. You cover that as your kind of, like, police blotter section, right? Do that.
Yeah. So, I mean.
But it is. I mean, I did. You know, we talked about this. You know, we haven't broadcast, right, since the inauguration, right? I mean,
no, we haven't.
That was only last freaking week, right? Holy crap.
Yeah. It feels like it's a slow news week.
I have to say, and I didn't put this in the intro, and I have to say it, and I go back and forth about whether I should, you know, I normally talk about stuff like this, but whatever. I actually, when Joe Biden, and just listen to everything I have to say here before you jump on me too quickly, everybody. But when I told Sean this already, but when Joe Biden got sworn in, I actually had like an emotional response and like had tears in my eyes. And I want to be
here.
I want to be 100% clear. Those were not tears for Joe Biden, right? As if like, you know, this monument or like, it was like the pent up exhaustion and horror being released. You know, I talked to my wife about it a long time after, like afterwards quite a bit. It felt like I didn't realize how much I was carrying around with me.
I mean, like, I would say the same thing. I mean, I cried a lot over the past few months, especially around this stuff. You know, like, after we were on the Capitol steps back in November and the race got called, I cried afterwards, like, holy shit, this actually, like, is over with. Like, you know what I mean? The light is at the end of the tunnel. You know, I got a little teary-eyed with, like, Kamala Harris getting inaugurated and seeing that and how important that was. But, like, I was actually shitposting while, like, Biden was, like, mid-sentence. Just, like, fuck, I missed it.
Yeah.
But, no, I mean, like, it feels great that, like, we're at this point. It's over, the inauguration-wise. It's great that, like, nothing – if the threats of violence last week didn't come to fruition, which was always good. You know, really, like, nothing happened in state capitals around the country. You know, like, that's why I wasn't in Harrisburg last week. I live a few blocks away from the Capitol and didn't want to be down here in case something happened. Yeah. Like, you know, but we're going to have to, like, yeah, like, we're back to being normal, quote unquote, air quotes. But no, I mean, like, we have to go big over the next couple of years. Like, these fascists aren't going away. Trump is already planning his third party. You know, you have Proud Boys thinking about starting their own party. Like, you know, we have fucking Nazis to deal with at this point.
Absolutely. Just by the way, Seth Goldstein is on jumped on their YouTube stream here, and he says he misses you. He misses me. Misses us. We miss you too, Seth. I'm looking back to hoping for the day that we're going to be sitting down and grabbing coffee again real time soon. And also welcome to the show, Jillian, too, as well. Appreciate the feedback. And Seth was saying basically he cried too with Kamala. And so, you know, here we go.
No, but it felt great. I mean, one of the things I thought was awesome was Bernie Sanders' inauguration outfit.
It's great.
Like, wearing the fucking winter coat.
Fantastic.
Like, I, you know, what people don't realize, like, he would have worn that if that was him getting sworn in.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, and...
No, I did see some people posted that, which is, like, absolutely hilarious. Like, we're tweeting out being like, hey, Bernie wore his inauguration stuff. You know, he's like swearing in for his swearing in ceremony as president if he wanted. The stuff that he bought back then when he got his shot, you know, it's like,
yeah,
it was perfect. Like, no, you're right. That's what he would have worn.
No, I mean, like, it's also, he has a working class attitude where you only own one fucking coat. Like, I don't own multiple coats. I own one jacket. That's it. Like, one winter coat. That's
all right.
And that's how it's been for like years growing up and everything.
Yep. Now, do you know? Okay. So a bit of trivia here. Do you know where his coat is from?
No, I don't.
It is from
Utica.
No. I could only hope. It is from Burton Snowboards, right? Which was a company that started in Vermont. Right. Became the first company for kind of snowboard specific stuff. And so he buys from this company, you know, so that's his Burton Snowboards. And Burton Snowboards sold out of that color of that jacket, like within minutes after people saw him at the inauguration. So yeah. Burton was like a bit like taken back by it. They were like, whoa, what's going on? So,
I mean, that's the same coat he wore in the 2016. I think like the 2016 campaign. Like, yeah, no, I mean, like, and I like his response. Like, you know, when you're from Vermont, you wear one coat and you got to prepare for the cold weather.
Well, yeah, he was saying that too about his, you know, about his gloves, his mittens. Like, you know,
Awesome. Yeah, the story behind the mittens are awesome.
Wonderful.
Like,
yep.
I mean, like, and that's one of the things about Bernie. I went door knocking up in Burlington like years ago for the Medicare for All plan that like fell through. But, you know, going in Burlington, in the suburbs of Burlington, everyone talked about how awesome Bernie was. And this is like years before he ran for president.
Yeah.
Like, he is an icon in his community. The people love him up there. They're saying like he always like rides his bike in the area. Like this is like 7 or 8 years ago, but yeah, like
yeah. back when he was young.
yeah. But I mean, like that's just who he is, and it's not surprising. Yeah. So I guess I did buy one of the Chairman Bernie stickers.
I saw that. I did see that. I'll debut.
My mom was telling me like, you know, she's like, I saw the sweaters, and I was going to get you one, but they sold out before she can get it.
Yeah, yeah, no, they were immediately. As soon as I saw it about like the sweatshirt, I was like, boom, I was going to get you one. I was going to I'm going to get sold out already. It's like, no way.
Yeah.
But so little, you know, apologize to everybody, a little love on Bernie here tonight, but that was one of the, you know, his memes, the memes that people put out with him this past week were just, were awesome. I mean, they were awesome. And they were, you know, the fact that him coming out with that coat and those mittens and off to the side, and then his first order of business basically coming out, you know, coming onto the talk shows, was to basically kind of like put a knife into this kind of unity talk, right?
Yeah.
Was basically to come out and say, look, you know, and look, if you ever listen to, you know, seriously listen to Bernie Sanders interviews in the past, you know, you've heard the same thing before. And if you talk to senators, they'll tell you the same kind of stuff. He was like, look, I'm more than happy to work with Republicans. That's not a problem. Right. But what is a compromise? Because, you know, Dana Bash was asking him like, well, you know, are you willing to compromise with the Republicans? And he's like, what do you mean by compromise? You know, when he rattles off the figures, right? How many people are starving? How many people are homeless? How many people are jobless? How many people are well medical insured? So what are we talking about compromise here, right? You're not going to compromise in getting the American people things that they need, right? You're going to get people, what, half a shot? That's going to be a coronavirus thing? You're going to get the like first step of the Pfizer, shot, but not the second? Right? Is that the compromise you're talking about? It's like, it's this bullshit way that kind of the media talks about issues about compromise, right? As opposed to saying like, no, are you going to work with anybody who'll be willing to work to get things done for the American people? Absolutely. Are you going to kind of like take the Republicans' extreme position and the Democrats' moderate position and come to the middle? No.
Yeah, like the Democrats offer $2 trillion and Republicans say $500 million or we're filibustering the whole thing.
Right.
Like, that's not a compromise.
That's not a compromise. That's like being held hostage to some bullshit sense of kind of like in the middle. But that's not kind of working together was going to be, you know? And I think that, well, we'll get into this in a little bit, but I think there's going to be that real question about what does it mean to be working collaboratively, or what does cooperation look like, right? What does it act? Are we going to see a different kind of model? I don't see something moving forward. Like, I don't honestly do not see, like, in the at least in this coming year, maybe the first 2 years, there's going to be very many opportunities for real collaboration. It looks like what the Republicans are going to do, at least this is how they put their stakes out at this point. Like, you know, we're going to take our extreme position and then we're going to cry that you're not talking to us. And you're going to expect we're going to expect the Democrats to cave and come in with some kind of like ineffective, inefficient, and kind of inadequate bill. And that's not cooperation. And that's not what's going to happen over the next 2 years. And I think
I do feel like.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I do feel. No, I don't mean to cut you off, but feel like there's a sense of like Democrats actually willing to go on offense here.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's exactly where I was about to go. Yep.
Yeah. Absolutely. Like we're, you know, it's not like the stuff with the Obama years and like wanting to play stuff out. It seems like, you know, slowly but surely Manchin and others are getting on to the idea of killing the filibuster, which has to happen, and playing offense on here, things. Like, you know, we only got 2 years here. We got 2 years. We have 2 years in power. And if we don't hold them in power, we don't hold them in the House, like, Republicans will like overturn the next election that they lose, sure, regardless.
Of course.
Like, that's where we're going. Like, and that's why we got to hold these people accountable. And, you know, like, we have to do as much as possible and get that shit out to the American people. You know, we have to go big. We have to do it as a party. And really, we have to crush the fucking Republican Party for what happened over the past 4 years and for how they've been acting for the past like 40 years at this point. Like, it's just, it's, you know, we've been saying for a while they're a cancer on society. They caused an insurrection. Like, they actually caused an insurrection. It's attempted coup. And they have to pay a political price for that. Like, and they have to be driven out into irrelevancy after this.
Absolutely. I mean, it's time to crush. And I think that, you know what, one of the things I was remembering, do you remember one of the things that during the campaign, when during the primary, Democratic primary, one of the things that when Bernie was asked about, you know, getting Medicare for All done, or, you know, the big programs done, this is one of the things that he, how he responded to. And I think that there's actually some, there's some people, I don't know who they are, in the Biden administration who are thinking about this. Bernie was saying is that, well, one of the first things you do, you're going to go to Kentucky, right? You're going to actually go to Kentucky in Mitch McConnell's backyard and tell those people in Kentucky about how Mitch McConnell is standing in the way for them getting health insurance, is standing in the way for them getting kind of extended employment benefits, is standing in the way of them getting what they need and protections against the coronavirus. And, you know, I would really like to see that. As like, if you want to really kind of put the screws in right now, you send people, whoever that's going to be, I doubt it's going to be Biden, but you send people to Kentucky.
You send Bernie down there.
Send Bernie down there, right? I mean, seriously, he's Mr. Chairman now, right? But send people to Kentucky, right, to do this. And, you know, you've even got an opportunity to, you know, give Manchin a little bit of a fig leaf here. Right, because I think Manchin is a little bit concerned. I mean, as much as Manchin wants, you know, is toying with playing himself as the kingmaker, right? Everybody's got to go through Manchin and his little moderate.
Manchin's already getting pushback in his own state.
That's exactly what I'm saying. He's getting pushback right now, so I think he's starting to think like, "Whoa, maybe this the play that I was going, and maybe it's not such a smart thing." Imagine if you got Manchin going down there with Bernie making this case. That gives Manchin his little bit of kind of like cover that he needs, and now he owes Bernie, right? Now he owes them for kind of like, you know, keep him in there. And I think that would go someplace. But it doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to be Bernie, right? It could be anybody who's going to go to Kentucky that is going to have constituent pressure put on Mitch McConnell.
Yeah. And also one of the things, you know, I think also what we're seeing with this is Biden with labor the first few days. The executive orders he signed basically saying, now I'm not going to do much, but pretty much saying like every American has the right to collective bargaining agreements, to have a shot at the table. Like the fact he signed an agreement saying that in there, the fact that he fired Peter Robb on the first day, which people weren't expecting that to happen. Yep. You know, it was a demand, but people didn't really see that being met. No, I mean, like, you know, and there, it's time that like the Democratic Party starts paying back the people who got them in power. You know, it was Absolutely. Labor, it was the progressive movement, it was black and brown voters who pushed Biden over the edge. And it's like, it's time for them, it's time for us to start getting, you know, what we got, what we gave them and get back in return.
Absolutely.
You know, the fact that like Biden, you know, we can talk about the $1,400 checks. But I mean, like, I think that the stimulus package, or not the stimulus, but like the COVID relief package that Biden put together is a pretty strong package outside of that. You know, Democrats, House Democrats are talking about $3,600 per child in your house, $3,000 per like adolescent pretty much in your house. You know, like that would help out my family members tremendously.
Sure.
You know,
look, and already you've got people like Markey, right? I mean, Markey then saying, okay, you're going to get these checks. Now we need to make them monthly.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's what we mean by taking the initiative and getting aggressive.
$400 a week, $400 a week unemployment extension through September, you know, $15 an hour minimum wage, no tip minimum wage, no like lower minimum wage for people with disabilities, intellectual disabilities. Like, you know, everyone gets $15 across the board. The fact that they're using the pandemic to do this is something that I didn't expect the Democrats coming out that hard on that.
No, like, I did not either. You know, I did not either. And let's, you know, before we get too much in the weeds here, let's also stop and kind of say, like, we're talking about if we were not in a pandemic, if we were not like sitting here and dealing with the aftermath of a freaking wholesale disaster, right, in like the past 4 years, right, and kind of like our economy in collapse and all this stuff. One of the things we would be talking about right now is that, holy shit, America fucking broke the glass ceiling for the first time, like, ever, right? Yeah. We'd be talking about Kamala Harris, and it'd be like a focus on Kamala Harris and what goes on. And, you know, I mean, that shows you how momentous everything has been. So I just want to give, like, my little, like, hats off to her. And, like, you know, I can tell you personally, right, from that meant for my daughter to see a woman as vice president. We watched the entire inauguration. I taped it. I watched it live. I said, then we watched it. I sat down as a family and watched the whole thing. And I can't tell you, I mean, I had my response, but to see my wife, my daughter respond to seeing kind of a woman take the oath of office. Right.
Yeah, no,
is monumental. I mean, it really is. And it's like, and it's at the same time, it's embarrassing that this ever freaking took this long. If you look at any other kind of like country in the world.
No, it's 100% correct. I mean, you know, just thinking about like where I was 4 years ago with Clinton, you know, crying, watching people go to Susan B. Anthony, like the response that had, and then Trump winning and the response that had. No, I mean, it was great. You know, it's great that we're finally at this point. It's relieving.
Yep.
Like the stress, like letting go of the stress of that has been amazing. No, I mean, like, and we have to get ready to hit the ground running again, but
you know, and it's happening. It's, and every indication is that's what's going to happen.
Yeah. And, but it's also like we can actually do something now. Like we can actually deliver. Like we're not fighting on defense anymore.
Right. Do you remember where we were? I mean, if you think about before Trump was elected, right, when it was Clinton. And I mean, granted, you know, I had hesitations about how secure Clinton's victory was at the time, even though all the polls at that point were pointing about. But we were talking about on this podcast, and we were certainly not alone in that. I don't mean to say that, right? We were talking about like, okay, the strategy of having to now push Clinton, right? Of really having to think about, okay, she wins. Now we need to kind of like, you know, take all this progressive momentum and kind of not do the Obama thing where everybody just kind of went back home and did brunch, but actually got and started pushing her, you know, towards more progressive stuff. Obviously that didn't happen. However, I think in those 4 years, those forces that have that mentality that you need to organize locally, and then you basically, no politician is a savior. No politician is a white horse. If they get in there and you have any leverage, then you start using it immediately. You don't give the honeymoon period and all that other nonsense. And you know, there's been good pressure thus far. And like you were what you started to say about, you know, the package that is out there, is in part a reflection of that pressure. And, you know, maybe the Biden administration sense that, you know, the winds have shifted a little bit since the kind of Obama administration.
Yeah, it feels like, I don't know who said this, but it was on Twitter or I don't know where, but like, it feels like this is a transition. But this feels like a transition away from the old neoliberal politics of the Democratic Party with Clinton and Obama. I mean, like, Biden is the embodiment of neoliberal establishment within the Democratic Party, but it feels like the winds are changing and he's willing to lead with that into a more progressive party. Because frankly, like, we need an FDR moment right now.
Yeah, big time. 100.
And I think he realizes that. Or, you know, FDR said he had to be pushed to do it. You know what I mean? Like, and, you know, that's been what we've been talking about on our phone calls for the past 4 or 5 months now, since this election has been over. Like, we have to push and be ready to push hard.
You know, I just hope that Biden has like enough ego left in him to think that he can be the next FDR.
What's that? I didn't hear you. You cut out for a couple seconds.
Sorry. Yep. I just got a note that popped up. Can you hear me now again?
Yeah.
All right. Good. I just got like an unstable internet thing come up real quick. Sorry about that.
Usually that's on my end.
Yeah, no, that was surprising. You probably got everybody and their grandmother on my internet right about now, but what was I just saying? Oh, about, you know, that he's got enough ego basically to think that he can be the next FDR.
And I mean, like, that's who Biden, but Biden also has that, you know, like liberal nationalism to him. He's always had that nationalist appeal,
yep.
You know, going back to 2016 with his his DNC speech. Like, I mean, that's always who he has been. Like that, like, you know, democratic nationalist, not like jingo patriotism, like
yep,
that.
Yep. Yep.
Like, and I feel like he can deliver on that. I mean, it feels like this is his, like, the moment he can actually do something.
Yeah, I hope so. And, you know, I have to say,
I just hope he doesn't get.
Go ahead, sorry.
I just hope he doesn't get, like, his cabinet around him doesn't hold him up.
Well, so far, so good. I mean, you saw, like, Janet Yellen is getting, basically, is going to be taken over. What is it? Is it Treasury? Treasury Secretary, right? That's huge, right? That's a big deal.
It's not Tim Geithner.
Yeah, exactly. It's not your kind of, like, you know, just off my Goldman Sachsman's vacation, right? Back in the government again. Right?
Wasn't Janet Yellen part of the Obama administration or no?
I believe, yeah, she was. She was at one point. She was always one that was, she had, she was closer in sympathies with some of the stuff that Elizabeth Warren was bringing forward.
Okay.
Right. So she was, I mean, again, let's be clear. We're not talking about if we had our choice, who would we pick? Right. But Janet Yellen, you know, and I think that, you know, Sam Cedar and the Majority Report and other folks have been talking about this. You know, David Dan did a great piece on her, like when they were first talking about her, about, you know, look, there's a difference between someone like Geithner, right? Or, you know, someone like Rahm Emanuel or something like, who are openly hostile to the left, right? There's a difference between those people and someone like Janet Yellen, who's not openly hostile to the left. She is not a leftist.
Ron Klain?
Yes, exactly. Same category, yeah. Right? They are not leftists themselves, right? But it does matter, I believe, in terms of how we can push, right? And how we gain and continue to build on the power that has been built over the past, you know, 4 years, 6 years, 10 years on the left to actually begin pushing these folks. And when you have things that are actually kind of rational and sane and actually going to help people, and you have a demonstrative power behind that, organized power behind that, these people are not going to dismiss it out of hand like some of these other folks were, like during the Obama administration. So that's good news, right? It's not like, let's be clear, it's not utopia, it's not a post-capitalist like glory time, right, to have a party. No, right? However, they are significant. They're significant in the possibilities it affords all of us, right?
I mean, it even feels like that, like Schumer's starting to get a little bit when he gets pushed.
Yeah, because he's afraid. He's afraid of getting primaried, right? And that's what you want.
Yes, we have to make these people afraid. Make them
totally. Absolutely. Right?
Senator AOC.
Yeah, I mean, I'm telling you. I mean, it's some good stuff. It's just a really, really good stuff that's going on. What else could I'm checking this out here?
In the impeachment trial.
Yeah, the impeachment trial that's going to go forward. It's getting delayed. I'm just going to say it flat out. I'm at the point where I really could, I'm not at all invested in watching it or even doing
neither. I don't give a fuck.
I don't give a shit. I mean, it's like, well, let me see.
I hope he gets convicted as he should.
Yep. Absolutely.
And, you know, I think do the Republicans make that Faustian bargain? Do they, like, just impeach him, get it over with, so he's never serving office again, so someone else can serve their own interests?
I don't know. You saw what happened with Mitch McConnell, right? Mitch McConnell, first out of the gate, sounds like, yes, he's bad, right? He did some, you know, he incited insurrection. That was the word I was looking for, incited insurrection. He incited insurrection and all that. But then, like, within 2 days, right, he backed off that, right? Because, look, the Republican Party is deeply wedded to, like, white nationalists.
State parties are fucking losing their minds right now, too.
Right. Well, exactly. And this is why Jillian came in, basically said in our YouTube channel, she said, as a Democratic county chair in PA, fuck them up. Right?
I think you see, like, the collective freakout happening with, like, state local parties across this country. I mean, like, every fucking
Arizona, look what's going on in Arizona right now.
Yeah, like, but also, like, locally, every fucking county committee and local Republican committee sent buses down to DC on the 6th.
Exactly.
Like, every fucking county committee did that. Like, the state parties did that. Like, you know, Oregon Republican Party put out a fucking, like, manifesto today that was just, or a couple days ago, it was just absolutely batshit insane. Yeah, Arizona going after Sidney McCain. You know, thank you.
I mean,
thank you for that.
No, and I think, like, Mitch McConnell and others have had to kind of grapple with the fact, like, oh, remember how all these years we've been toying with, like, white nationalists to help us vote? Well, turns out we are the white nationalist party now. And so
Judy Ward was right. They're going to bomb our fucking house.
Yep, exactly.
I mean, when she said that a couple months ago, we were all laughing at her, but no, she's right. Like, these people like, this is where we're heading towards with the Republican Party. This is the monster they created. Like,
yeah, and so this is what it looks like. You know, I think that they're finding that they don't know where else they're going to get votes other than that kind of, like, that, you know, lunatic fringe on the right. And so what's going to happen? Well, you know, McConnell, my guess is that what's going to happen, McConnell and the kind of obstructionists that have been kind of there in when Republicans are in opposition, This is kind of what they do, and McConnell's going to double down on that stuff. So, like, on the one hand, you look at what's happened with this two-week delay, right, for the impeachment trial of Donald Trump. Like, Mitch McConnell comes out and he says, well, you got to give time for the president to get a legal team together and make sure he gets his case there. Now, in kind of like an abstract, and this is exactly how he works, in an abstract situation, right, that's a reasonable thing. Okay, somebody's going to be put on trial. They want a little time to prepare. Okay, that makes sense, right? At that most abstract level, 100% correct. But McConnell has, he doesn't care about that. If you flip the script, right? If it was a Republican impeaching a Democrat, and a Democrat said, like, well, we need a little time, Mitch McConnell would be like, that's too bad. You had all the time you need. One more time you need. You got the full resources of the federal government and everyone else behind you. No, go ahead. We're starting tomorrow. So don't give me this. It's all crap. And you got Lindsey Graham already out there, right, kind of toying with the idea of kind of like, you know, impeaching Joe Biden, right? I mean, come on.
Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Right? Was it day one? Conspiracy? Right?
Yeah, it's funny. The people who were saying that, like, you know, Biden was going to step down and let Kamala Harris become president on day one are actually trying to make Kamala Harris president.
Yeah.
The Q world.
Well, it'll save Q, right?
I guess we should finish out with the...
Yeah, I've been delaying a little bit. Well, so first we talked a little bit about the stuff with, Sean already went through the stuff on the labor stuff, the really positive stuff on labor. So the one thing I don't want to get into some sort of big thing on this one.
I think like the Bad Faith podcast is the perfect name.
Right.
For these people.
Well, the irony is this, right? Okay, so.
Irony is not lost on this name.
Right. And it's so frustrating to me. And like, so look, Breonna Joy Gray, she's, you know, the former, you know, kind of national press secretary for Bernie Sanders. She did great work with Bernie Sanders. And Virgil Texas, you know, on Chapel Trap House. And look, you know, and then, you know, there's been this back and forth over this controversy. I shouldn't even say controversy because it's a freaking, it's like a Twitter media shit, right? Is really what it is. But there's a reason I want to bring this up, and I'll try to say this as succinctly as possible. Right. So for those folks who don't know what forced to vote is, like, forced to vote was basically an attempt by some kind of more on the left, basically saying that without making the demand that there should be a vote on the floor of the House for Medicare for All, right? And until that vote happened, that lawmakers should not vote for Nancy Pelosi as Speaker of the House. And they were going to abstain from the vote or vote for somebody else. Right. And so it was like a tactic. Right. And even like Breonna Joy Gray was, you know, come out and say it was a media tactic. It was something to kind of draw attention to stuff and all this kind of thing. Right. It was never an issue where anybody thought that the Medicare for All bill would actually pass. Right. The people who were proponents of it were actually people who said that, no, we know it's not going to pass. Right.
However, also, like, kneecapping Nancy Pelosi, your only ally in the fucking House leadership.
Well, but look,
it's pretty, like, for someone else, like, who would step up and replace, get the votes together to replace the House Speaker?
Well, I mean, look,
Tim Ryan, like, you're going to end up with a conservative white dude.
Maybe.
Like,
right. But the bigger deal was there. Like, let's say, like,
I think it was a stupid fucking tactic from the beginning.
Well,
I think it was never going to pass. I think bringing up the bill to vote, you know, would only set back the Medicare for All, like, movement, because you don't bring up bills that are going to fail for a vote to watch them fail if you're pushing for it. Like, that's not how, like, reality works with that type of stuff. And, like, anyone who has a political sense knows that. And, like, it's just, I think it was just a stupid tactic, in my opinion. And, like, I feel like the Democrats in the House got more out of Pelosi with getting rid of PAYGO and other rules, like, that are a lot more monumental, like, instrumental for the next couple of years than, like, having a vote on Medicare for All or some token vote on Medicare for All.
Okay, look, here was, I get that, and I think that's a valid critique of it, too, as well. My take on it was a little bit different. My take on it was like this, is like, and some of the stuff that I read, I wish I could tell you where it was from. I think it might have been a piece from Ryan Grimm in The Intercept. I'm not 100% sure of that. When AOC said something along the lines of, well, we don't have anybody, right? And my concern initially was this, to say, look, I'm all for pressuring to get Nancy Pelosi out and extracting some concessions. I have no problem with that. Right now, there were a whole.
I think that's just not the concession to make.
Well, okay, let's just say that even that concession, right? Let's just for the sake of argument, let's say that that's going to go forward. You want, and the purpose was to get Nancy Pelosi out or extract a significant concession. Okay, the way that that's powerful is if you actually have an alternative candidate, right, that you don't think has the votes in the House at that point, but is nonetheless going to be a strong advocate for Medicare for all. And so now you have this kind of public debate between two visions of the Democratic Party, right? Right. And then even if you know they don't have the votes, you can basically go through a couple rounds of voting, and it's going to make it very difficult for someone like Nancy Pelosi to basically step away from Medicare for all. Right. That would have been an interesting tactic. I don't know if it still would have been the best thing to do right at this point, but just hold on for a second. But when you had the Progressive Caucus and you had people like AOC,
but also the Progressive Caucus really hasn't done much over the past couple of years.
But that's what I'm saying. It's like if they had been cultivating a counter to Nancy Pelosi. So basically what this whole idea about force to vote, it was like, you know, if you want to put it in Marxist terms, it was a superstructure kind of debate. It was about kind of ideas up here in the media landscape without the organizational infrastructure to actually deliver on the goods. And so anyways,
like whatever. A Philly DSA meeting.
DSA kind of got thrown under the bus on this too as well. I mean,
no, I mean, like that Philly DSA, like Philly DSA is notorious for having like big debates like that without actually like action or structure.
Right. Or it's just basically say, we're going to come up with these ideas and we're going to tell you what you should do because we're on Twitter. And then if you don't do it, we're going to basically say that you're a sellout. And that's essentially what happened. So when AOC was basically saying, I don't think this is a good strategy. Like, I don't think this would be behind it. Yet people, like, you've heard us talk about him before. You might be familiar with him anyway, Jimmy Dore, right? Who's whatever. The guy's
idiot.
He's a freaking hack. And whatever, he, depending on whose story you believe, he either kind of ramped things up or he took it over, and he used it as a platform to basically start calling those members of the squad like sellouts and all this. And it became this like ideological litmus test. Not even ideological. That's the thing about it. It was a tactic litmus test. So you couldn't even get to argument the merits of this thing. So anyways, that got really frustrating. And then, you know, Sam Cedar on the Majority Report basically came out and was like, you know, called out Jimmy Dore for what he was doing and basically said, you know, look, you know, I didn't care one way or another. People want to do it, they're going to do it, whatever it is. But I am not going to, you know, I am not going to jump in with Jimmy Dore, because Jimmy Dore is a bad actor. Right. As he's actually said on that podcast, on the debate with Breonna Joy Gray, like, he is the epitome of a bad faith actor. Right. So anyways, there was this, you're probably going to see that. And here's the reason why I'm even bothering putting this in the show tonight and talking about this, right? Is that there's a few things that happened with this show afterwards and happened that debate. And you may have seen some of this stuff and you may have not seen some of this stuff, but the reason that Sam Cedar went on Bad Faith Podcast to talk about this was to kind of debate this and kind of talk a little bit about this and talk about strategy and tactics. At least that was what he understood about it. Instead, it became about like these series of gotcha moments or something like this, where they're trying to argue over this like real minuscule tactic and projecting out about these, like, you know, these ideas about what could happen. And I watched the show, right?
Brought up Michael Brooks's name.
Well,
that was like a low blow. Yeah.
That was so far over the edge where Breonna Joy Gray basically said, you know, Michael Brooks, as we said, you know, he's the co-host of the Majority Report, who died suddenly this past year. And, you know, and Sam would admit this too as well. I mean, he would say this pretty directly. Michael was to the left of Sam, right? And they would have debates about kind of some of strategies and tactics. But she basically said, well, what would have Michael said? How would he come down in this debate? And as if so you're going to have an argument over who gets to lay claim to Michael Brooks' legacy, really? At a time when you have people who are still grieving over his death that work with him and are good friends with him every day. I mean, seriously? I mean, that was just like, I was horrified when I saw that moment. I was like, that's actually what got me to go watch the whole thing. When I saw that clip and I was like, what the fuck is going on with these people? And I've listened to the Bad Faith podcast before. I've listened to Chapo Trap House before, right? You know, and I like listen to them on a fairly regular basis. Don't always agree with what's going on there and things like this. But this was what I got concerned about. I'll tell you about this. Listening to the actual debate was a dynamic on the left that I've had to unfortunately witness too many times in my life, right? Which is it becomes about these arguments over purity, right? And kind of like what I should say, it's clothed in kind of like either ideological or tactical radicalness, right? But really what it's about like high school popularity contests, right? Except with like freaking earrings and tattoos, right? I mean, that's really what it's about. And what I saw like the worst of social media idea or social media identity going to get activated in that, which it was about. And like literally they were posting content and clips of these quote unquote gotcha moments, like within moments of the debate ending. Right. And I was shocked by that. I mean, Sam has had Virgil Texas on the show, multiple times, and they've had a pretty good relationship. Again, they don't necessarily see eye to eye on things and they have good debates about this. This was just something different. And so last thing I want to say about this, and then I'll turn it over to you and then we can close out. But it's like, as we move forward, right, that can't be the way we do our politics, right? And I
don't think it will be. I think it's just taking that. Jimmy Dore's just taking up. That's just taking up oxygen in the room. And, you know, I actually feel like Bree, she has pretty much like delegitimized herself with a lot with like in the movement, progressive movement, or like, I think a lot of people see through her bullshit as well. I don't know. I don't know people who are serious organizers that listen to her and take that seriously.
I'm glad to hear that because it's like, you know, I'm constantly reminded. And
she's also like, I've also muted her on Twitter.
Oh really?
So I don't have to see their fucking forced to vote stuff popping up.
Yeah, it was everywhere for a while and things like that. And, you know, and people can get caught up into it pretty quickly, too. And I've talked to some people who, you know, who don't necessarily know my full politics and all that kind of stuff, who listen to Jimmy Dore. Right. Who have kind of piqued their interest in some kind of quote unquote progressive politics because they found Jimmy Dore. Right. And, you know, my response is like the guy's a hack. Just. Like, if you want to listen to something, I'll give like several other places to go. I said, look, I love podcasts, things like this. Check out these. Right. And, you know, I don't just try to pick one, try to pick a range of them.
I stopped taking Dore seriously back in 2016 when he said Trump would be better than Clinton because of it. His acceleration is bullshit.
Of course.
And now he's platforming Blue Billow Boys. So.
And exactly. So you guys, you know, we gotta watch this stuff on our left. I mean, again, I don't want to kind of equate Jimmy Dore with like QAnon, right? It's but the left has got its own kind of like its own problematic discourses. Let's put it that way, where it's really about kind of like emoting, and not kind of like emoting and thinking carefully about kind of directions going forward. And usually that emotion is somehow about, you know, people getting a lot of clicks and people earning a lot of money and building out their platforms, right? And I don't think we should be duped by people on the right, and I sure as hell don't think we should be duped by people on the left. So, whatever. Take that for what you will. But, I can't even say go watch it because it's like it was painful to watch.
So, I guess I want to close it out with this.
Yeah, please.
Donald Trump has issued a press release.
Who's that?
Statement from the office of the former president. Today, the 45th president. Basically, he started his own like office of the former president. It's funny. Oh. That's about it.
You don't want to tell us what he wrote?
No, not really.
Good. Thank you. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. That's a little gift.
Deep platforming. I guess he's like fucking pissed he doesn't have a Twitter account anymore.
Yeah. So what's he going to do? So now he's got to actually create an organization. That organization won't last because people will stop getting paid really quickly and then it'll be that.
Yeah.
So anyways, all right. So this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Want to remind you that you can help support this show and you can support everything that we do at Raging Chicken by going to patreon.com/rcpress. That's patreon.com/rcpress. And of course, if you're not willing to become kind of a ready to become a member quite yet, you can always drop us a little tip in our tip jar by going to paypal.me/rcpress. It's paypal.me/rcpress. And if you're kind of listening to our podcast, make sure you head on over to our YouTube page. Just look up Raging Chicken Press, Raging Chicken Media over on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe to our podcast. You hit that little bell so that you know every single time that we go live. So you can help join the conversation, just like Seth and Jillian tonight. And also want to give one more shout out to our kind of a newest member, our newest patron, and that would be Ben. Ben coming in at the $25 a month, the class warrior level. Thank you so much, Ben, for help supporting the show. Sean and I are going to be back in just a little minute. We're going to leave you with a little bit of our normal transitional music on this kind of Out to Coop Live, Out to Coop flagship show mashup. We'll be right back after this message.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1937. That was the day workers at the Kent Avenue power plant in New York City struck at Brooklyn Manhattan Transit. The power plant served as the sole source of electrical power for the entire New York City subway system. Transport Workers Local Union 100 had been trying to beat back the company's push to form a company union through an educational organizing drive there. Out of the 505 workers at the plant, only 35 were TWU members. On this day, two boiler room engineers with 10 years on the job each were fired for their union activity and given 3 minutes to leave the plant. Inspired by the Flint sit-down strike, then still in progress, TWU President Mike Quill called for a sit-down to protest the dismissals. 31 workers locked themselves in, and Quill announced that if the two fired workers were not reinstated by 6 a.m. the next morning, all switches would be pulled, shutting down the entire transit system. He insisted that the BMT had long abused its workforce and was in violation of the new Wagner Act. Newspaper headlines screamed of a workers' insurrection at the power plant, and the BMT quickly called in company goons to threaten the hundreds of picketers surrounding the plant. Workers stood their ground and prevented strike-breaking forces from breaking through the barricaded entrances. They organized food brigades and gained support even from the newspaper reporters who helped with food deliveries. By 5:30 a.m. the next morning, the BMT gave in to the demands of Quill and the TWU and reinstated the fired workers. Impressed by the victory of the job action, the power plant was fully organized within 2 days. Labor History in Two brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and the Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out to Coop podcast. It's our Out to Coop and Out to Coop live mashup Monday night show. Thank you all for joining us. If you're joining us live on our YouTube channel, unfortunately, we could not do the live broadcast to Podbean this evening, which kind of bummed me out. But, you know, we'll work that out somewhere along the way. So, Sean, as exciting of and a back to normal it was in national politics, not so much here in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania seems to be a little bit stuck in the last era, if it will.
Yeah, we're still like going fucking nuts with things. Yeah, I guess let's start off with the right to know request.
Yeah, please, let's hear it. Let's do it.
Yes, yeah, so we at PA Spotlight got a right to know request in last week. Pennsylvania Senate Republicans spent $1 million to disenfranchise Pennsylvania voters. Basically, we followed the request asking for their legal fees over the past year on all election related issues. And they spent $1 million. I mean, yeah, it's just like one of those things when you get like, I love filing rights and requests. It's sort of like a pastime of mine.
I'm glad you enjoy it.
Oh yeah, nothing like nothing gets me going than like, you know, firing off like 15 or 20 night to know requests in a row, knowing that I will get something back in return because I know what I'm asking for. Like, who is it? It's like Jason Leopold.
Yeah, yeah.
From like Truth Out or BuzzFeed now, wherever he's at, like that, like he's like he calls himself like the FOIA King.
Yeah, right, right, right.
Yeah, it's sort of like that. Once you know what you're getting, it's pretty easy to like get it. But yeah, Republicans spent $1 million on they hired two law firms.
PA Republicans. Let's be clear.
Yeah, the Senate Republicans.
Yep. It's not even not even like all of Pennsylvania Republicans, right? Exactly.
Caucus. They use their public money, you know, which
public money you say?
Yes, public money.
They that's the money that they found in the street and picked up, that you mean like that?
Yes, yes, in the budget process. You know, there's been some little bit of pushback from people saying like it's only a small part of the budget. No, they used your money. They used a lot of your money. Who cares about like percentage of the budget? A lot of your money went towards law firms that specifically exist to suppress the vote, like around the country. Like the one is like Holtzman, Vogel, and Torchinsky. I don't know the fourth name involved, but like these were the people trying to get Kanye West on the ballot in multiple states. Yep. These people are involved with like ALEC and redistricting. They Holtzman, the woman who started this, specifically brags about working in Florida during the recount in 2020 as an election lawyer for Bush and Cheney. So like
all around good people, basically, you're talking about all around good people.
Yeah, some of the best, some of the best. So, and then the other group they hired is Obermeyer Redman. Obermeyer is a firm you. People who follow Pennsylvania politics closely will recognize their like employee also happens to be the head of the Pennsylvania GOP, Lawrence Tabbas.
Just so, coincidence, total coincidence.
So the grift is real.
The grift is real.
But like, I mean, like, so they spent this money on like, I'm doing some like basic research. A lot of things around like drop boxes, what we were seeing, lawsuits that we're seeing in the summertime. The 3-day extension was a big one. Like these people were planning these engagement letters were going from the beginning of May to the end of October. So basically like they were working on this shit to like fucking steal your vote going back in May.
Like, all around great people.
Yeah. So that's pretty much what I have to say on that. No other outlet has reported on this yet. I'm pretty sure people will at some point. I know like other outlets have these same requests. So,
seriously, this will.
Like, there's been crickets.
Yeah, this is gonna look. I mean, come on. This is one of those stories, right? That is not going away, right? Yeah. I think there's a really good reason why there's not. You know, the PA Senate Republicans have not come out and kind of offered a press conference on this.
A staffer for ColtSpark, which like Mike Tarzai is associated with out in Pittsburgh, said like, you know, the reason why Republicans spent so much is because the governor and the Department of State usurped their powers.
Okay.
that was like the only like response from a Republican over the weekend about this. Everyone has been pretty quiet, and rightfully so. I mean, like, yeah, like they used $1 million to suppress the vote. Your taxpayer dollars there stop you from voting.
There you go.
To make it harder for you to vote.
Your tax dollars at work.
Yeah. Instead of like going towards infrastructure week, you know, it was like voter suppression year.
Crazy. That's crazy. Well, there you go. I mean, there you go. This is a perfect example of what the priorities are of the Republican Party. And you know, that is what it is.
Yeah,
there you go. So, but you know, at least you've got some other folks in the Pennsylvania Republican Party that are saviors that help protect us against the effects of the attempted coup. People like Scott Perry, for example.
So I put a tweet out like 3 or 4 weeks ago. There's a reason why Scott Perry and Jim Jordan were calling for unity. That's probably because they're going to get arrested at some point because they were complicit in this. I mean, like, Scott Perry showed up to stop the steal votes, stop steal rallies outside Harrisburg back in November with Jim Jordan. And it was pretty fucking odd seeing Jim Jordan on the Capitol steps of Pennsylvania when his place is like 300 miles to the east in Ohio. Like, you know, that was kind of like a red flag at that point, like seeing what the fuck we were dealing with the Stop the Steal stuff.
Right, right. Yep.
No, and it turns out Scott Perry wanted to head a coup within the Department of Justice to then put a Trump loyalist in from Northeast Philly, Father Judge High School. It was a Philly monk, actually.
That's who it was. No yes. joke. No yes. joke.
Guess coup.
Those were good memes, too, I have to say.
Oh, what? The guess coup or the Philly?
Yeah, the Philly monk.
Oh, yeah. And then, I mean, but, like, and he wanted to get this person involved and fire the whole entire Department of Justice and your staff to then overturn the elections in Georgia. And you got to think, like, if they would have pulled that off, Pennsylvania was next.
Yeah. Yep. And there you have it. And Scott Perry, and I love the fact that the reporting on it, it kind of went from like this, you know, say there's some, you know, state center.
Or oh, and then the Democrats afterwards start playing guess coup.
Guess coup.
Did you see that?
No.
Yes. So on Twitter, that's afterwards, awesome.
Guess coup.
Once the original story broke, like literally within like 45 minutes, they had the guess coup. Someone, I think a staffer, my friend Hans, came up with the guess coup hashtag. And he had like his representative like tweet out the guess who gifts files. Like people like knocking down the thing. He's like, okay, I guess I'm going to like say it was like this representative. And this representative jumped in and was like, no, I'm going to say it was this representative. It wasn't me. They all use like the guess coup hashtags. And so like, yeah, we were making memes and it was a fun like.
How like, aware do you think people were that it was Perry?
We were all thinking it was Mastriano.
Well, that's, I mean, he would be like the go-to person, right? I mean,
yeah.
Mastriano would be like the go-to person. It's like, okay.
Well, it was actually funny because then I was talking to Roxbury and Roxbury's like, no, it has to be someone within the federal government because of the Department of Justice. So
right.
He thought it was Mike Kelly. And a lot of people thought it was Mike Kelly because he put his name on it. But I don't know who had, like, a couple of my friends had Scott Perry. But yeah, they were right.
Man. What were the odds? Did they odd it out all out and everything like this? Did you have any money going on this or what?
Everyone had their money going on Mastriano. So.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Someone, yep, house always wins. I wish I was running that gambit. But
yeah.
But that's good. But that was, I mean, that was a big deal. I mean, you know, you've got this, the reporting on that was, I mean, pretty excellent. And, you know, clearly, I mean, I think it was like a single byline on it, right? It was a one woman reporter, one from the New York Post. Wasn't the Washington Post was the one that was able to out him and basically say it was him, or was it the Times in both cases?
I think it was the Times.
Okay. So they basically, you know, came out and clearly had some fantastic inside track. And my guess is probably had a track on that well before that happened.
Yeah. And also Perry wasn't answering his fucking phone calls to reporters for weeks.
Yeah.
So it's like they couldn't get a hold of him because of that.
Yep. Well, that's one way to delay, right? you try to delay it. So there you go. So Scott Perry, good old, you know, once again, Pennsylvania tie to the attempted coup. And speaking of ties to the attempted coup, have you got anything more on the Perry thing?
No, Scott Perry's a fucking piece of shit. That's
there you go.
It.
And there's calls for him to resign right now. There's petitions
and
out
he
there.
He said no. He put out a meme that said N-O on it.
Yeah, there you go. So increase the pressure on Scott
Perry.
We're
going to do this the hard way.
Yeah.
Expel him.
Exactly. That would be awesome. Right. I think it's better. Right. I think it's better for him to be expelled if the pressure goes on, because then it forces people to actually, you know, kind of take action on it. We'll see if it happened. I mean, if he resigned, I'm not going to shed any tears. I mean, they'd be see you later. But you know, look, if they're going to be forced, they have to push him out. I think as long as the campaign to get him to resign, right, or to have them booted out is going to continue.
Resign. I remember like the night the attempted coup happened, we were on a national call with like the democracy, one of the people who helped plan like the national protests. And what they were saying, like the two words are resign or remove.
There you go.
That's it. It's only two demands.
Your choice.
Yeah.
Not hard. Well, good. But this, now this story about this Riley Williams, right? This 22-year-old woman from the Harrisburg area, who took part in the Capitol insurrection, who, you know, there's different reporting on it. Some said that she took it. Some said someone of her friends took it and gave it to her. And somehow she was reported to have, you know, wanting to try to sell it to the Russians. Nancy Pelosi's laptop she stole and was gonna give it over to the Russians. Now, it turns out it was a laptop of a staffer. Didn't have that much stuff on it, according to reporting. Again, we don't know all this stuff exactly. An ex-boyfriend of hers who apparently was not the nicest guy to begin with, right? At least what was some of the court documents that, you know, he was, you know, not our kind of knight in shining armor, but sounded like that he, you know, he may have been abusive, and at least what some of the claims are there. So he had motivations to kind of out her and come forward on it, but nonetheless came forward and basically, you know, outed her basically and kind of like said, took part in this. These are pictures of her. And she's got the laptop and is trying to sell it to Russia.
So, okay, here's the question.
Yes.
I think we have to really answer about this.
Yeah.
Or ponder. What does accountability look like? There has to be accountability, right? But do we send these people to prison in an environment where gangs and white supremacists rule the day? Right, pretty much rule the environment. And do we risk radicalizing these people even more by forcing them into white supremacist gangs while they're in prison? As a progressive, you know, believing in restorative justice and all that, those are just core values. But what is accountability in something like this? And, you know, I feel like we're going to be arresting a lot of people imprisoning a lot of people who should probably not potentially be in prison and go through rehabilitation programs, mm-hmm. or some sort of we have to denazify or de-Trumpify this. And I don't feel like throwing these people in prison for 1 or 2 years en masse will fix that. And I also think that the people who should be going to prison and spending time in prison are the people like Baked Alaska, are like Nick Fuentes, the people who are the ringleaders, the thought leaders, Alex Jones and others. In my opinion, there are a group of people that absolutely should be going to prison for this, mm-hmm. who played a role in this and should definitely be there. But I don't know where we look with, maybe Riley Williams, my opinions have changed since what she's doing, telling people to destroy the evidence. But we have a really fucking horrible situation on our hands. Do we risk radicalizing these people even more?
Right. So my thoughts on these are twofold. One, I think let's go back to the point you made about restorative justice, right? I think any call for whatever you call it about, say, therapy or kind of.
How do we get these people out of a cult?
Well, but here's the thing. Right. So, I mean, use the word denazification. I that's what I've been thinking about along the same lines. But I think that has to be pegged, right? At the same time, that has to be pegged to broader criminal justice reform, right? Because look, let's talk. What happened?
There are people sitting in jail from the Black Lives Matter movement from the summer still.
Totally.
Who should not have been.
Well, totally. Right. And there's there's people that are there. Look, where were the people kind of saying that, you know, oh, you've got these gang members, right? They were put in jail because they committed these crimes. But you know what? They got this mentality because they got kind of caught up in these gangs, right? Because of their situation.
Shitty drug policy, you know, throwing nonviolent offenders in prison. And
right. The one thing that is has been a little uncomfortable for me, right, in the calls for, okay, you know, having to think very carefully about this poor 22-year-old girl, right? Or woman. She's a woman. But I'm saying that's how you hear people talk about it in the media. That's what I mean.
I mean, it's also but also spending the past year going to these rallies.
Yeah.
Right? A lot of the people, I'm not going to say a lot, but a sizable minority, a chunk, a plurality, not even a plurality, but you're getting to a plurality of that, are people who are 18 to 25, 18 to 30. Like, you know, we got a fucking problem with this. Like, these aren't like your stereotypical, like, people in wheelchairs, motorized scooters that like the left or Democrats, resistance Democrats, like to make fun of in memes.
Right.
No, like, these are like people who are physically capable 18 to 30 year olds who have been going to these rallies, who have been getting radicalized, and can actually be a clear present danger. Like, Nick Fuentes had a rally on the Capitol steps, like, back in December, you know, who was pictured in Nancy Pelosi's office. He runs that America First organization with the big AF flags. You know, it's a neo-Nazi group at this point, pretty much. Like, these people aren't old people showing up to these. These are all, like, right, college-aged white kids in their 20s, like, 18s and 20s showing up. Like, we have some fucking issues that have to be, like, looked at. And it took, like, this arrest to realize that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and
I conceptualize,
like, what I've been watching over the past year.
Right. Like, but I think that this is like one way I would think, the way I think I have been starting to think about this is like, look, this has to be part of a broader program against white supremacy to begin with. Right.
Yeah, because I mean, Trump destroyed those programs that Obama put in place.
Well, I mean, look, like, exactly. Right. I mean, but I mean, right from because you can say, you know, it's like the same kind of stuff with what we've been talking about this over and over again. What are the conditions that got us to this point? Right.
It's economic.
I mean, economics, like unaddressed racism, right? And then, frankly, I'm sorry, but I've had this conversation now with multiple people. But I mean, how many times have we had to deal with like arguing with people? And this is fine. I'm willing to have this argument. Arguing with people early on. You remember this, Sean, back when we were reporting on white nationalists in Pennsylvania, right? About what the hell they were doing. And people saying things like,
well, if you just don't ignore them,
right?
Yeah.
They'll go away.
If you ignore them, they'll go away.
Don't give them a platform. Don't give them the they just want the spotlight. That's why they're there. And look where we are. That whole idea about ignoring them and they'll go away is a load of garbage.
I mean, it's always been a load of garbage. Wayne Lamont Jenkins, Daryl Lamont Jenkins, about this. And he said it perfectly like 4 years ago. You know, today's identity Europa is going to be tomorrow's Republican leadership.
Totally. And here we are. Like,
and it's exactly what we've seen, like with the committees, like the party committees, the state parties, the county committees, like your local, like bumfuck township committees are sending busloads of people to D.C. for an insurrection rally.
Yep.
I mean, and everyone saw this coming for like if you like paying attention. I mean, I knew that Wednesday was going to happen weeks in advance. Just from what we were seeing in the Capitol.
Yep.
Like these people are going to go down to DC on the 6th and fuck things up.
Yep.
And they did exactly what they said they were going to do. Like,
so, I mean, I look at it like this is like, yes, obviously, do we want to take people who are like, you know, 22 year olds, right? And the way that we deal with what they did is that we just kind of, we do what America loves to do. It's like we
throw
just
him in the jail,
throw him
away.
In jail. And somehow that's justice, which is disgusting in so many different ways. Right. What I mean, but at the same time, to put all our like national focus, because you remember what freaking happened after Trump got elected about how the national media somehow you decided to devote all these resources by going to all these small towns and all these post-industrial towns to seek out the Trump voters and try to figure out what happened. It was like a national industry about how to do this, right? But meanwhile, like freaking African American communities, Latino communities have been left behind for decades.
You have who's that one reporter from Pittsburgh? That woman.
I just can't remember right off the top of my head.
She has me blocked on Twitter. But no, she would go to the diner out in like bumfuck Pennsylvania, talk to Trump supporters about why they feel the way they are instead of like, you know, skipping over community of colors or Jewish communities about like why they're feeling completely insecure about the last 4 years.
Yeah.
Or about like the rise of fascism and racism in this country.
Or if you're in Pittsburgh, how about go hanging out over at Liberty Heights, right? And basically say like, hey, how do you feel about the whole place gentrifying and have kind of like diverse communities of color being kicked out for Google employees? How about that?
Or how do you feel about like you know, your mayor comparing the radical left to the radical right.
For example. From,
like, you know.
So, yes, I mean, I don't look, I don't want to, you know, I don't like you and I talked about this a little bit in a different context before, but he's like, I don't like the whole idea about like, well, if it was, you know, if it was like a black woman who did this, you know, they would have thrown her in jail and kind of thrown away the key. So therefore we should take this white woman and throw her in jail and throw away the key. For me, the problem is throwing in jail and throwing away the key. That's the problem there. And so you have an opportunity. This is what I mean by kind of pegging this to kind of criminal justice reform writ large, right? Because, I mean, that's where we're going. Now, in a more narrow basis, it's like this woman, her mom, right? I mean, I don't know did you hear Rachel Maddow's report on this the other night?
I read the,
the judge order kind of thing that came out?
Yeah.
Right? Okay. So,
and that's what like prompted me to like go on that tweet, like rage or thread about that. Like, you know, I actually feel like the judge did the right thing in that case.
I agree.
And being sympathetic. And she fucked it up, obviously.
Totally.
But like, you know, like I think the only way we're gonna reach these people is showing them compassion at this point. Like, I don't think like throwing them in jail and locking them away that's just gonna make the situation way worse.
Well, I think what the judge did in that case, why I thought that was what I like what the judge did is basically that judge laid down the marker, right? It's like, you know, and my wife and I were talking about this the other night. It's like what that was is that was like going to school. We're going to talk about what the Constitution really means, right? And here's the Constitution, and this is what the Constitution means. And this is even why you had the opportunity to come here with a lawyer to argue your case, right, that could get you kind of released to your mom's custody on bail, because you're guaranteed that representation. You're guaranteed with a fair. You're guaranteed to kind of like a presumption of innocence, right? And even though that is the very thing that you were trying to destroy, these things still protect you. That's what it means, you know, about the Constitution. And he's talking about the Constitution win. And I thought that was awesome, right? And you know, he basically says to the mom, "You understand?" He says to her, you know, says to you know, Williams, says basically, "You understand this, that if you try to take off or whatever like this, your mom can go to jail. You know that, right?" Says to her mom, "You know that, right?" Mom says, "Yes." "All right. Then here we go. Because this is how justice should be dispensed. And this is what it means to go through the law." And she's out less than a day.
And fucking she around.
Logs on the internet and basically goes and gets in contact with all these people to basically tell them to destroy evidence related to the insurrection. Now, at that point, I don't know what else you can do. I mean, I think if I was the judge in that case, I'd be like, clearly this is a violation of the terms of the bail, back to jail.
And also, like, did you hear what happened in Philadelphia? With the two people at the convention center?
No.
So remember back when the vote count was going on, the two people who drove up from Virginia?
Oh, yeah. With all the guns.
Well, were at the fucking insurrection. They were released on bail, and the judge, they got arrested. And so the judge went up their bail from like $15,000 or $7,500 to like $800,000. And now they're in jail and they can't get out until their trial.
There you go.
Or unless they produce, you know, $85,000 in assets or cash to like,
I don't know. There's not an easy answer. There's not one easy answer.
No, there's not an easy answer. And there's people like that who should be in jail.
Right. I mean, obviously you come up and you basically going to threaten to kill people in the Democratic, and then you just basically do the same thing, except you're up your game one step further. I mean, what do you do at that point?
Yeah.
I mean, those guys, clear danger to society, right? I mean, look, I'm not kind of like, hey, let's like, you know, everybody should just be let free and we should just be nice to them. Everything's be fine. There are some people that, look, you got no option because they're going to go. They're going to hurt people one way or another. Right. And then you've got other people. I mean, like, again, this Riley Williams, like, OK, we could say that she was duped. She was part of this cult and she is. right? But then, you know, you get a hard talking to it, and you have a mom who comes up and tries to rescue you, and basically, you know, because she presumably cares about you, and then you just go and you just double down on it. I mean, I don't know what else to do. You know, at some point, you also got to say, okay, look, this is a constitutional question, and these people have got to be here. So they have to be here to stand trial. And if they're caught talking about, you know, now she's talking about, like, evidence tampering. That's an additional charge.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, I don't know. I mean, at one point, you know. So it's just whatever. My bigger point there, though, too, as well, is like, why, you know, focusing so much on this case? I mean, I'm really glad you brought up this stuff about restorative justice and everything, because I think that's a really critical question to be part of this. But I also think that, you know, we need to be super hyper conscious, right, as we're doing our organizing. And I know there's a lot of folks out there that are already on board with this. But she's from the Harrisburg area. Right.
There's a bunch of people from the Harrisburg area got arrested last
exactly.
week.
Exactly. She did not. It's not like she had to go to like D.C. or Oregon or Arizona or Arkansas to get radicalized.
OK, so here's the thing. Like, I was home last week in the Horsham area, right where my parents live. I saw more Trump flags flying after the inauguration than I did like the previous 2 years living in Harrisburg.
There you go.
And I get like Harrisburg is a bubble, you know, more insular. It's a very progressive community. The city's very progressive. You have like, well, this neighborhood's very progressive. And then you have the poorer parts as well. But like, it's a democratic city through and through. Like, even driving around, like my car with bumper stickers on it never got ran off the road in Harrisburg. I've gotten ran off the road a couple of times in Horsham.
Yep.
Like where my parents live when I was living back home, like for having a Bernie Sanders sticker or I Love Unions sticker on my car.
Yep.
Like it was amazing seeing all of the Trump flags, the Trump train flags, no more bullshit. The IRA or not IRA, the NRA, the Gadsden flags flying in my neighborhood, taking a daily 3.5 mile walk.
Yep.
Then like you want to talk about like what's reactionary as fuck. Again, that's another thing. Like, these people aren't your, like, stereotypical, like, militia people from the woods that, like, the left or others want to make them out to be. No, these are your neighbors in suburbia Pennsylvania, in suburban Philadelphia.
Yep.
Like, these people are your community members. A whole lot of people from the Harrisburg area got arrested. Yeah, Harrisburg area has its history of being racist, white nationalist, anti-Semitic, misogynist. Like the surrounding region going back decades, but like the stuff in outside of Philly and the suburbs, you know, like the stuff I was seeing back home, I would expect down in Bensalem or Bristol or Levittown, where like the people who left Philadelphia, my neighborhood where I grew up in Philadelphia, Juniata, Kensington, Fishtown, Port Richmond, due to white flight, that's where they all moved to, is that part of Little right. Bucks. Like I don't really expect seeing that in Central Bucks or Central Montco towards Doylestown.
Dude, I'm in Upper Bucks, and I see them around my neighborhood. I mean, yeah. I drive around here, too, as well, and these people...
But you're more of like a rural area of Bucks County.
Not so much anymore. I mean, yes, around it, but I mean, even if I'm going up through some neighborhoods through Quakertown, I mean, Quakertown is like, okay, it's not Philly, right? But it's, you know, I mean, it's not like a little kind of tiny town anymore.
But like,
anymore.
Quakertown for me always been like a redneckish area. Like, always has but like that connotation to it.
Sure, like, but we could talk about the Lehigh Valley, right? And we got there were Trump rallies all throughout the Lehigh Valley and Trump flags all through up there. Even if you just go down right around, what do you 22? Call it? Cedarcrest Boulevard and Hamilton Boulevard, right in that kind of whole area, there was everything. All these Trump rallies, like right there in those intersections. I mean, it's not just like, you know, in the hills.
Yeah, like it's like these are your reactionary neighbors in the
exactly.
suburbs.
Exactly.
Like so many Blue Lives Matter flags or resupport our police signs up everywhere.
That's what it's, you know.
Yeah.
Code for.
But I mean, like it was definitely like eye opening and just seeing that like someone mounted their fucking Trump train flag to a telephone pole on County Line Road. Like it's not even part of their property. It's public property.
Yep.
They fucking mount this thing 10 feet up in the air. So you can't get to it. You need a ladder. Like, yeah, it's just, it was definitely like a, wow, this is like where we're at type of thing.
Yeah. Well, unlike a neighbor that lives kind of like right around the corner from where I live has this like big piece of property with these giant Trump signs put out there. And he did a similar kind of installation on the public telephone pole there, because after two what appears to be high school girls went up there and ripped down all his Trump signs, he installed cameras, right? Or somebody else actually drew penises and stuff on the Trump on the, all of his signs. So then he installed cameras, and then he caught, well, at least caught on picture without their faces, like two high school girls ripping down his Trump sign. So, and that's installed on a public light pole, right? At kind of a well-traveled intersection down the street. So,
yeah,
there you go. Anyway, so that's the fun that we got here. Still have lots of time to root out white supremacy right here in our neighborhoods, everybody. Crazy. All right, anything else you want to throw in for the PA?
No, I will say my one neighbor put a fucking Trump thing on his like stump. Like
his Trump stump.
Or no, I thought okay, so I thought it was Trump. It said trust Jesus. Uh-huh. But it was like in the Trump colors.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so.
Whatever.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back with this week's last call. We're going to talk about beer news. Probably not a whole lot of space news this week, although it was a pretty cool week in space, and whatever else is going on. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We'll be back right after this quick break. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull no punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken, once again here with Sean Kitchen, unemployed Trump staffer.
I love that name. Yes. Seth loves it as well. He messed.
Awesome.
I had to like, I got that name from the people talking about like the Trump staffers who are getting fired from their jobs from having Trump on their resume. So I had to like... You know, I think that one's going to stick around for a bit.
Yeah, it's good. I like it.
Other than like Fox News death cult.
Yeah, that was a good one. That was a good one for a while. Yeah, that's good. Well, like I said, I don't have a whole bunch of space news this week. And as I said at the top of the show, have not been imbibing quite as much. Certainly, I've imbibed less than Sean has on this show tonight over the past week. So
yeah, Dry January went to a halt a couple weeks ago.
Yeah,
the entire insurrection kind of threw that.
Yeah. No, totally. No, I'm not. I'm seriously not even doing a. Wasn't kind of committing to a dry January or anything like this. I'm doing all this online classes and everything like this, and it's been just getting up and running. I keep on finding all the stuff that I need to keep on doing and staying on top of and so on. And so I've been just working all this time, and then I get it tired at night, and I'm like, okay, I don't want to wake up groggy in the morning, so I just go to bed and then get up, and then it's been like that. But I did, like I said, it's like I didn't do any dry January.
It's been a while.
I didn't either. I will say, for the record, I was having whiskey during the time I wasn't having beer.
There you go.
Like, yeah, enjoying some good bourbon.
There you go. There you go. So, but I do have a couple announcements for those folks who are looking for, you know, always want to know what's happened over at Free Will Brewing right here on Perksy. They do have a couple new releases, which I have not had yet. So I just want to be, you know, I can't speak for them, but I am so psyched to get them. Again, they have one called Fool's Gold Mash. Fool's Gold Mash is a sour ale with blueberry, grape, peanut butter, bacon flavor, and milk sugar. I don't even know what to do with that kind of combination of flavors in my brain. So that was the one I'm just going to have to try. Those come in 4-pack cans. It comes in at about 7.5 ABV. This other one, which has got one of the best can arts that I've seen in a long time coming out of them, is called The Longful Hunt. Right? It's got this great can art of this fox and this kind of cartoon fox going on. It's really awesome. But that's a double IPA with Mosaic Matieka, at Idaho Gem. That comes in at 8.5 ABV. And this is their description of that one. It's brewed with a base of crushy flaked oats and wheat and hopped in a kettle with Mosaic, then double dry hopped with Motieka. Is that how you say? Motueka?
I guess so.
And Idaho Gem, and then even more Mosaic in cryo form. This one utilizes a few brand new practices in addition to our repertoire, including never before explored yeast and hot side experimentation. Gentle and soft carbonation brings out a ripe fruity nose, followed by notes of candied tangerine, summer melon, and apricot preserves. That sounds really interesting. And I'm really curious about some of the new techniques that they're kind of trying out right now. And then there is also the absolutely kind of phenomenal pineapple passion fruit mash. That is, once again, sour ale with pineapple, passion fruit, vanilla, milk sugar. Comes in at 7.5 ABV. If you just need that little bit of tropical getaway right now. And then one other, which I guess they're going to have is one of their standard now releases. They have the Perksy Pilsner, right? You want something a little bit on the lighter side. They've produced some great Pilsners that have come out of there. Most of them have been in the German tradition. This, however, is the Italian style Pilsner. I'll be honest with you, I have no idea what the difference is. But I've always loved that nice little kind of bright, kind of sharp Pilsner taste. That comes in at 5.2 ABV, very sessionable. So you can always check that out as well. So that's what's happening at Free Will. However, my last kind of beer delivery, right? Because I was basically, I didn't want a sour, didn't feel like IPAs or that kind of thing. I had real cravings for some stouts. And I remember the last time that I got some stuff delivered from Levante Brewing down in Westchester. They had a couple stouts that I thought were really good. And I think I remember saying on the show, these stouts were great. And so I said, let me see what they've got. It turns out they had a ton, right? So I got myself four packs. One of them was more of an IPA, but the three that I had were absolutely phenomenal that I want to give a shout out to. One of them is not available. The one that is not available, they had it's called Dodge Dunk Dip. It was an Imperial Mint Cookie Stout, and whatever you think about mint and stouts and things like this, I know it's not some people's thing. I happen to like it. It was phenomenal. Right. It was just like, you know, it wasn't overpowering and a kind of artificial mint or something like this. It was just great. It had a nice light mint, but had some super rich, creamy stout. It was phenomenal. So that one is no longer available. I got some of the kind of the last in that heap, but fear not, because what they do still have available are, let me just find them here. Where'd they go? I just had them. Okay. Yes. Here's one. So one of them is called King of Lombok. It's an Imperial Coffee Stout. Once again, this just blew me out of the water. Fantastic Imperial Coffee Stouts. Lombok is an Indonesian island that was struck by a series of devastating earthquakes in both 2018 and 2019. This is reading from their website, but its infrastructure is still in need of aid. Our head brewer, Greg, had visited the island days before an earthquake, so he wanted to do something special for the recovering citizens of Lombok. Proceeds will benefit the Indonesian Red Cross Society. So I thought I'd give that a kind of a shout out there. The beer itself is phenomenal. Right, that is still available for delivery. They deliver, they've got the kind of free delivery over, what is it, $75 now for Levante Brewing. Absolutely super. Okay. Let me go back here. Sorry. It's a little bit, always get a little
turned around on their website sometimes. So the other one that I had was, let's see, what's it called? God, this is, I know this is riveting discussion that I've got going on right now. Oh God, it just disappeared from the website. I had it here. Let me read from my thing. Another one that I did have that they still have available, which is called The Case of the Missing Custard Coconut Cream. That is an IPA, and that one is absolutely phenomenal too as well. The other one to give a shout out for is, oh yeah, it's called Mercurial Silk. That is great as well. It's another stout. It's an Imperial Milk Stout. And it's kind of, you know, they describe it as like the Mercurial Silk is the rich velvet dessert nectar of the gods, right? Whatever it might be, but it is, it's got Ghirardelli chocolate in it. It is super smooth, very tasty. None of the kind of real sharp bitterness that you get with some stouts, just, phenomenal drinking, but that comes in at the, big 12% ABV. So, those are some things to point to. You know, always check them out. I'm telling you, I look down there more and more. If I had, you know, if I had a hobby, and a kind of whatever, an artificial liver, right? I would be testing all this stuff out all the time, but obviously you can't, but so good stuff. So recommendations, check out Levante and definitely check out their stouts. Their stouts are excellent. And you can always have them delivered with, for free delivery coming in at over $75. And then at Free Will, of course, you could always have stuff delivered. If you hit the $85, order, you can get delivery for free too, as well, right to your door, anywhere in PA when it comes to Levante. If you're talking about Free Will, anywhere in Pennsylvania, Virginia, Washington, DC. So, do check them out. So that's Levante, you can have it delivered to DC as well. So I mean that's some of the stuff I've been looking at here. I feel like I've had very little free time to like really absorb too much else. I have had the opportunity to finish the Star Trek Discovery this season, which was fantastic. I had the opportunity to finish the His Dark Materials first season, or maybe his second season, first season, which was fantastic. And I'm still making my way through that show, The Last Kingdom, which is pretty good. But anyways, what are you doing for fun these days, Sean?
Oh, nothing much. Sorry, I was just texting something on Facebook. You know, nothing really too much. You know, I had some fun last week back home in the Philly area. Went down the forest to Maine a few nights. Picked up some 4-packs, pounded them real quickly. They had
did they make it home?
They did not make it to Harrisburg. No. <I did not. laughs> So like I won. I decided to like do a scratch off before I went back home last week.
Yeah.
And won $40.
Yeah.
So they went right towards beer money.
There you go.
Yeah. So, you know, it's funny how that thing works. Yeah. You know, came back to Harrisburg. My stimulus check was waiting for me in the mail.
Oh, was it really?
Yes, it was.
Very good.
So I bought a leg for today. Decided to splurge and bought a Le Creuset sautés pan, which I'm really looking forward to use. I've been cooking a lot with my Dutch oven over the past past year.
Yep.
And it's a 6-quart pot, so I want to get something smaller. And Williams & Sonoma had the Le Creuset on sale, so I decided to go get it from there. My mom told me to,
I swear.
No, my mom was like, I told my mom I wanted to get a saucier pan, like something like a cast iron saucier. And she's like, well, if you're going to do it, like, don't spend $80 on it. Spend an extra $100. Get something that's going to last a lifetime. So looking forward to having that in the mail in a couple of weeks and to be cooking with it.
There you go. And are you going to be taking some Julia Child's cooking lessons too as well? And
No.
and learn and up your scale on your French cooking too while you're at it?
Well, I'm looking forward to like – I wanted to get something for like braising small amounts of chicken and
smaller
stuff like
amounts,
that.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, I like braising. I don't mind braising beef and stuff like that. But if I want to braise like some chicken thighs and – you know, carrots and potatoes, really easily to do that. So
right, instead of having like, you know, braising for the week as opposed, you know, braising for the day, right?
So, or a couple days.
A couple days. Right. Yeah. No, I get you.
So no, I'm definitely looking forward to that coming in. Nothing really too much. I cooked a couple times when I was home. Parents forced me to. They forced my mom to. Wanted me to.
Well, this week
I have a really good.
Well, go ahead, sorry.
Because I have a really good bolognese recipe that I fucking love.
Nice.
And I've been making that pretty much steadily for the past like 6 or 7 months. And I decided to make that back home and, you know, pat myself on the shoulder on that one.
There you go. I've got a recipe. I wanted to do this today, but it just, my day went to shit. I have a fish chowder recipe that I got. So I'm going to be doing, I mean, this is like the perfect weather for me for some good old fish chowder, some, good old clam chowder, all that kind of good stuff. So I'm going to be making some of that this week. I've been actually cooking a lot more fish. I've had this, like some of this frozen fish for a bit. I mean, not like years or something like that, but it's been sitting around. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to spend kind of like on the weekend and things. I'm just going to pull out some fish, look for some quick fish recipes because it's not something I've been normally cooking on a regular basis. I've been doing that. So that's been cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
I've also started looking to get things for my deck. Looking forward to that.
Spring better come soon. I'll tell you that.
I know.
You guys got that winter storm warning tonight?
We have a winter weather advisory.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, I think
so. Tomorrow we're going to be outside of Scott Perry's office in Harrisburg.
Nice.
So
in the freezing rain, good. That'll be good work.
In the freezing rain and nice. Hey, it has to start somewhere.
Yeah, there you go.
No, I mean, like, there's already talks about like having people like Eugene or George run again for Congress, and you know, I think now's the time to not have those conversations and start like cultivating our own candidates. You know, if we're going to take out Scott Perry, now's the time to start finding someone in the area who's progressive, who can run, and who could beat Scott Perry.
Right. And I, you know, and people, you know, sometimes those people are born in the kind of organizing that you're talking about, like organizing against Scott Perry right now. And we saw this happen again and again with some of the most amazing candidates, you know, in the past election, even those, like a bunch of those folks didn't win the election,
for instance.
Well, I mean, Cory Bush, but like right here in Pennsylvania, right? I mean, Shayna Danielson, right? You got Tara Shakespeare, you know, you've got,
we have people in this area who can run and should run for Congress. And like, frankly, I don't know if that's in Eugene's or George's plans to run for the seat again. You know, I don't think it is.
Yeah.
You know, like we have to start thinking we can't be relying on a DCCC candidate to come in and pick it up.
100%. Like,
I respect Eugene and think he ran a great campaign, but also I feel like the DCCC made some mistakes with running about affect, about the person's affect versus like, you know, like running as a movement.
Right. Well, you know, again,
with the messaging, and that's like, you know, now's the time we have to start like looking at this and doing these type of, soul searching for this area and who's going to beat Scott Perry in 2022. Perry's looking to run for U.S. Senate. Mm-hmm. So I don't think he'll have a seat in 2022. So we'll see. I think he's going to run for U.S. Senate. We're going to have, I'm looking forward towards Pennsylvania politics over the next year and a half, 2 years.
Yeah.
I mean, we live in this election. I mean, I don't know about you, but my job is pretty much tied up in election cycles. And it's, you know, already thinking about 2022, the shit show it's going to be. We're going to have an open Senate race, an open governor's race. I think it's going to be interesting.
Well, I think especially, I mean, the governor's race and the Senate race, I think are going to be really, really interesting. And, you know, next week, maybe next
I
week.
Think So I don't think there's going to be a Democratic primary for the governor's race.
No, I think probably not. Right. But
that's going to be Shapiro's. Right. But like, we're going to have some great candidates lining up for Senate. And you know what? If like Fetterman is like the moderate of the group, you know, he already raised $1 million. DCCC probably wants Chrissy Houlihan or Connor Land to run for that seat.
Fuck Connor
we'll
Land.
See.
I'm just saying.
Not going to disagree. Okay. Not disagreeing
I'm
you there.
Say, I'm just saying that.
But you know, like Malcolm Kenyatta is looking to run for that seat. You know, people like Val Arcouche, Jim Kenney is throwing his name out there. Don't think that's going to happen. Not after
Kenny's
gas
going nowhere.
Protesters.
Right. Yeah. No. Exactly.
I mean, I think Kenny's constituency is the same as Peduto's, just like uppity white liberals in the city. That's about it.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a constituency like in like a very, very specific constituency, and that's it.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, no, I mean, looking forward to it. I think we're gonna be starting weekly protests outside of Perry's offices in the district the next couple of years, and you know, hopefully he's gone Fantastic. By that point.
Well, hey, I look forward to talking about this more on Friday, so we can get into a little bit. I want to one of the things I want to just kind of like tee up for Friday's podcast, because we will we'll have our more regular flagship one on Friday, and then we'll have something new for you next week on Out to Coop Live. But one of the things I'm curious to pick your brain a little bit about is the Senate seat and kind of some of the stuff around there, just to get your take on some of the different folks that might be running. And I already know that, again, you mentioned Fetterman kind of already raised kind of $1 million. He's been out in front in terms of fundraising.
You see the Fetterman interview on CBS Morning?
I have not. I've got it tagged, so I've got to see it. Yeah.
The photos of him like in his coat and then gym shorts.
Yeah.
It's pretty hilarious.
Well, I tell you, I've got a good friend of mine is, you know, not from Pennsylvania, but is a huge Fetterman fan. He's, you know, I think Fetterman is resonating in interesting ways in, you know, cause look, let's be clear. He built a little bit of his national profile, right. Over the past 6 months. So it was a good time for him to launch the campaign. Right. I'm putting this aside. I'm not saying that therefore everyone goes for Fetterman. My only point is that Fetterman kind of really capitalized upon that, got out of
the down in early money.
Yeah. And he's, there's people that are paying attention to him on a national level. Let's put it that way. I'm not just talking about like the major
in a serious way.
Right. And people who are, you know, and I'm saying people that are not like either just like random observers, but some people that are, you know, to the left, but also very pragmatic. Right. We'll talk a little bit more of this on Friday, because I'm curious.
I mean, like, if we're talking about like Fetterman being the front runner, or in a field, Fetterman, like, yeah, I think it's gonna be really, really interesting.
I've had some questions from people already about like, well, you know, do I start backing Fetterman or do I start? I'm like.
Wait and see to see who else jumps in.
I'm just saying we don't know who the field is at this point, right? So I'm not, and that is not a comment against Fetterman. I want to be clear. I'm just saying this is more like we don't even know who's going to put their hat in the ring at this point. So I think it's a little bit premature to just be like, you know, like, oh, well, we need to choose our candidate now. Okay, wait a minute. We're going to see who's going to be. And I think that we're in a position to actually, what I mean by we, I mean the kind of progressive left, are in a position to kind of have some influence in this, right? So, you know, let's see what we get here, but also talk about what's going to be important for us to push in any candidate at the Senate level. So we shall see.
Yeah. So
anyways, all right, we'll talk more about this on Friday. All right, Sean, man, thank you for kind of being able to jump on tonight. I was kind of missing it on Friday, but there was like no way I could do that. And I was actually relieved a little bit to know that you didn't have like good internet access too, because I was like, okay, so then it, you know, would have been something anyway. So I'm glad we were able to hop on tonight. So thank you all for jumping on tonight. Thanks everybody who joined us on YouTube tonight. Want to remind you that you can become a patron of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month by going to patreon.com/rcpress. And if you're over on our YouTube page, right, head on over to our YouTube page, our YouTube channel. Make sure you hit that subscribe button. Make sure you hit that bell so you get notification every time we go live. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. It is a Monday night, and I got an early day tomorrow. Great hanging out with you on this Monday. Happy new normal. See ya!